I'd like to thank all of you for being here and for the organizers for inviting me. And I'd be remiss if I didn't make a couple other acknowledgments. Seth Dabney and Ted Zobach have been very strong supporters of this work over the many years. And also, my old advisor is here, Gary Kachanowski, standing in the back of the room, making sure I'm telling things properly. And Gary had done a lot of the work before myself. He had led up to a lot of this work. Now, I've got a laser pointer. There. And I expanded the title of my presentation because the focus is looking at the soil movement by tillage, more specifically the resultant soil movement by tillage, which we call tillage translocation. And the interest in this tillage translocation has come from an interest in soil erosion and soil erosion by tillage, or tillage erosion more specifically. Now many of you may be familiar with tillage erosion, but I suspect many of you are not. So I'm going to cover a bit of background about tillage erosion before I get into the issues of modeling tillage translocation and tillage erosion. Now, very basic information. Tillage erosion is the net redistribution of soil resulting from the variability of translocation by tillage. And this is the variation in the distance it's moved as well as the mass that it's moved. And if you look at areas where the amount of material is increasing in terms of mass or distance, you get soil loss. And if you have decreasing amounts of movement in terms of distance or mass, you get soil accumulation, which is indicated here as well. And in topographically complex landscapes, you actually get a progressive downslope movement of soil. Regardless of which direction you're moving, you get an increase in movement of soil as you move over convex areas and decreasing as you move over concave areas, causing soil loss and accumulation in those landscapes. And that's a very dominant pattern throughout cultivated landscapes in North America. Now, there have been a number of research studies that have taken place over the last 20 years. And all of them have very strongly demonstrated that tillage erosion is a very significant form of soil erosion, and that there are very significant implications or impacts from that erosion on the soil and the environment. And I'm going to highlight a few of these impacts as they relate to the research that I've done with my collaborators over the years. And I'm going to use this to back up one here, just to give you some results here. When we look at soil landscapes such as this, we have as much as 20 to 100 tons per hectare per year soil loss in those eroded upper slope landscape positions. And those areas may account for 15 to 30% of the cultivated areas, as that picture illustrates. And if we look at the progression or the development of that type of landscape, and we start off by using this simple illustration of what I would consider to be a prairie landscape in this example, where you have broken uncultivated land probably about 100, 110 years ago, and you have very negligible soil loss, but you have variability related to the hydrology and the biology and expressed through the pedologic processes. And as you move forward in time to what we've seen in the last 20 years, you see that you have very severe soil loss in these upper slope landscape positions where you lose as much as 30 to 50, or in some cases 100 centimeters of topsoil, and you get an accumulation in the lower slope landscape positions. And that's what I refer to as a mature state of soil erosion. Now, if you run that forward even further, we actually get what I refer to as an advanced state of soil erosion, where we have even more soil loss on these hilltops and more accumulation in the lower slope positions. But with this advanced state of soil erosion, you actually have this subsoil material here actually moving down over the lower slope positions, and actually it's degrading the whole landscape. And if you talk to soil surveyors, at least in the prairies as I have, this is becoming a very common observation, that you have this almost a reversal of profiles where you have a CBA and then another A, and then you get into a mixture of B and C material topping off that profile. That's indicating that this degradation is fairly extensive within these landscapes. The tillage erosion causes more soil redistribution within some landscapes than wind and water erosion do. And the series of slides I just showed illustrates when you look at tillage erosion independently. But much of the evidence we have indicates that tillage erosion is actually the predominant form of soil erosion in many of these landscapes. And in these landscapes where tillage erosion does dominate, you get soil accumulation by tillage erosion, and it buries organic-rich soil in the lower slope landscape positions. And just to give one illustration of why that may be important, as you start to bury that organic material, you actually start to decrease that material's potential to produce and emit greenhouse gases in one study we've shown. So you can start to see that these things have quite a significant impact on things such as carbon sequestration and greenhouse gases. Tillage erosion acts as a major delivery mechanism for water erosion, which is certainly a major point of the discussion today. And that material is delivered to the conversion areas of the landscape where overland flow concentrates, and because of that, you start to move the soil and all of its constituents into waterways. So there's an indirect relationship between tillage erosion and water erosion. And this diagram here illustrates these convex areas between the troughs here, and those convex areas are where you see the most soil loss. The areas where you can obviously see water erosion through this rilling and gullying in between those knolls, that area actually has a lot of water erosion, you can observe it, but it doesn't have any long-term impacts on the soil quality because tillage erosion is continually offsetting that loss. And to take the indirect relationship a little bit further, tillage erosion exposes subsoil, which is highly erodible to wind and water. So even though tillage erosion may not be dominant in all landscapes, where it does occur, it does have this indirect impact on wind and water erosion, therefore the larger environment. Some other findings that are of significant note. All operations that disturb and move soil can cause significant levels of tillage erosion. Two examples I'm going to give. One relates to work that Kevin Thiessen's done, a student of mine who's got a poster on this. If you look at field operations such as root crop hilling and harvesting, those operations can actually cause more soil movement and more erosion than practices such as plowing or all primary and secondary tillage operations combined. You have to start thinking of all of these operations as being potential sources of tillage erosion. Some of them really cause you to rethink the whole approach to conservation tillage systems and the design of tillage systems. Another example relates to the photo that I have on the screen here. And this is an air seeder in no-till systems in Ukraine. And this is fairly common to find air seeders in the Canadian prairies and presumably throughout much of the Great Plains area, where you have these knife openers that move through the soil and plant the seed, and you drop fertilizer or anything else you want behind the seed, and you have a significant amount of disturbance. Now, this is considered to be a low disturbance seeding operation, but we do have high disturbance seeding operations where they have sweeps on these implements, and you can get so much soil movement that you can blacken the soil after one operation. And when you start to look at that, the amount of soil that's moved and the erosion associated with that movement of soil, because you're not moving very much soil, but it moves so far and with such great variability, you can actually get as much tillage erosion from a seeding operation as you can from a plowing operation. It's that significant. And soil conservation practices that reduce wind and water erosion can increase tillage erosion. The one example there is the chisel plow. People may consider the chisel plow very useful for reducing wind and water erosion because it leaves residue on the surface, more so than mobile plow. But the chisel plow can actually move soil considerable distances and with a lot of variability. Because of that, the chisel plow may be more erosive than you would find from a mobile plow, and therefore it may be more of a significant issue in some landscapes, maybe more detrimental than the mobile plow in some landscapes. One other finding related to work that we're doing on trying to find a solution to some of these problems relates to the fact that you can reverse tillage erosion. And you can do that by moving soil from the bottom of the hills to the tops of the hills. And this is because with tillage erosion, the soils move locally. It doesn't actually leave the landscape. It moves downslope in a fairly progressive fashion. The quality isn't really impaired. So it is possible to go into those landscapes and move that soil back up the hilltop and actually restore much of the productivity that may have been lost through decades of erosion. And this is just showing what happens actually quite frequently in the prairies, where you have farmers that have these earth movers and they go into the lower slope landscape positions, scoop out that soil, and then apply it to the eroded hilltops. Now, the conclusions drawn from my experience in looking at erosion is that to control tillage erosion, tillage translocation must be controlled. And this can be achieved through appropriate decisions in the selection and use of equipment. I'll expand upon that a little bit, but using different types of tillage tools and operating the tillage depth and speed differently, you can actually control the amount of tillage erosion you get within a landscape. And to support this decision making, there's a great need for a better understanding of tillage translocation and to represent this with better models. And much of the work that's been done on tillage erosion has been focused on the tillage erosion itself rather than tillage translocation. And a very basic conceptual model that is pretty widely accepted now relates tillage erosion to the erosivity of the tillage operations and the erodibility of the landscape. And to expand on that a little bit, the erosivity of tillage is a function of the implement design, its shape, the arrangement of the tools, and the combination of tillage tools that are in the implement. The operation of the implement in terms of the depth and speed, they are very significant and vary in the amount of soil that moves and how far it moves. The match between the tractor and the implement has a huge impact on the variability of soil movement within a landscape, and then the behavior of the operator, because they can make decisions which can actually exacerbate the amount of tillage erosion you get. And the erodibility of the landscape, slope gradient, is the major factor in all of the erosion models. The change in gradient will actually cause that net change in soil movement. Slope curvature, actually that is best described as a planing effect, but we include slope curvature in the models that we have developed to try and express that planing effect. And then soil physical properties and the changes in those properties, which generally doesn't show up in many of the models, but we know intuitively that it has a significant impact. So if you look at the mathematical models of tillage erosion, they all start from a fairly basic starting point, and that's the measurement of tillage translocation. As I've illustrated here, that showing the depth of tillage, and this is the till layer, and you move soil, and you can measure that soil movement. And to think about what happens in these topographically complex landscapes, as you move downslope, you're going to actually move soil further. You move upslope, you do not move it as far, and the net downslope translocation is the difference between the downslope and upslope movement. So that's what gives you the erosion that you observe in a landscape. Now, these mathematical models are obviously much more sophisticated than that, in that they are built on relationships between translocation and slope gradient, and this is illustrating where you have up and downslope tillage, and there's the downslope slope gradient, theta x. And you look at the forward translocation, forward being coincident with the up and down slope direction of the downslope slope gradient. And you can establish these relationships where downslope tillage creates more soil movement than upslope tillage. And it's expressed in terms of the relationship by that coefficient beta there, which we refer to the tillage erosivity coefficient. And that's with respect to forward movement. And for cross-slope tillage, again, you're interested in that downslope movement, theta x. You're looking at translocation in the lateral direction in this particular case. But again, you have the relationships where you have the greater movement as the soil is being thrown downslope than it is upslope. So you have this, again, this beta value, in this case, beta L for lateral. Now, the model of tillage erosion is often represented with an analytical solution. And this is showing the continuity equation for soil movement within a landscape, which is commonly referred to in the models in the literature. And if you expand that to get kind of a general transport equation, this is the coefficient value, the beta that I showed in the previous slides, the 6. And there's also a coefficient I've included for slope curvature. And that is what drives the soil movement in the landscapes. Now, the solution is actually a fairly simple numerical solution for the calculation of tillage erosion. If you have a point that you're interested in, you're looking at the movement of soil forward through that point and laterally through that point to determine the changes in soil that are occurring at that point of interest. The changes are obviously a result of changing soil landscape, soil and topographic conditions of the landscape, but also resulting from changes in operation, particularly tillage depth and tillage speed. Now, the more sophisticated models, which are under development, and some of them are fully developed, but just not necessarily widely used, include the variation in soil properties from one landscape to another. And a good example of that is landscapes in Portugal and Spain, where they're doing a lot of work on tillage erosion, or have done a lot of work on tillage erosion in orchards, they have very non-cohesive, very, very stony soils that tend to move differently than soils that you may find typically used under cultivation in North America. And so there is an impact of soils on the tillage erosion. As well, the variability in soil properties within a landscape. As you vary bulk density within a landscape or moisture content, you're going to affect how the soil moves and therefore the amount of erosion you're going to see associated with it. And then the leading effect, which I've referred to in some of my publications, and that is expressing the impact of slope gradient not only on the soil that's being moved by tillage, but also the mass of the implement and the tractor itself. So the center of mass, which is being affected by gravity, is actually ahead of the point of interest. And so it may be 2 or 3 or several meters ahead of the actual point where the tillage tool is impacting the soil. And that's what's referred to as the leading effect. You can count for that in the modeling as well. And then the final point I've got here is the planing effect. And this deals with, it's a scale issue. It's dealing with the fact that you're looking at soil at a particular point, and you have to consider the microtopographic and mesotopographic features of that point and around that point and relate it to the scale of the implement. And sometimes the tillage implements are very large. We're dealing with things that may be 4 or 5 meters in length, and maybe several, maybe in excess of 10 meters in width. And so you have a considerable effect that extends well beyond the point. And if you think about the points around it, there may be several points around that that you're interested in that are actually affecting the soil movement at that particular point. And so there's a scale issue that's not thoroughly explained here, but there is a scale issue that deals with, or that can be dealt with in the models using the slope curvature factor, which I mentioned earlier. Now, the more sophisticated models under development explicitly represent tillage depth and speed, and their variation within a landscape in response to changing landscape conditions. And these models are a little bit more challenging, and that what they're doing is they're decomposing that beta value, that tillage erosivity coefficient, and they're trying to separate out the influence of gravity on the soil movement from the influence of gravity on the mass of the tractor and the implement, which is varying in response to those changing conditions, and it's varied through changes in tillage depth and speed. And that's fairly challenging to do in this context. And I would argue that it's probably much more appropriate to look at tillage translocation and models of translocation itself to try and get at that level of process rather than in the models that I've just outlined. Now, looking at tillage translocation, there are a number of conceptual models, but they all come back to a description of soil movement during tillage or soil movement by tillage in multiple phases. And I'll go through a description that I've generated of multiple-phase soil movement, where the first phase where you have the impact of the soil with the tool, and you have compression, failure, and lift. And as that tool is moving past the point, the soil moves upwards over that tool, and it's obviously moving forward throughout that whole process. Then the second phase is the projection from the tool and impact with the ground, and it may ultimately come to rest some distance ahead of its initial point. And the third phase is also related with the impact of the ground, where you may have failure, bouncing, rolling, and sliding, and ultimately coming to rest at some distance away from the point of initial impact. And then the final phase, one that hasn't been dealt with in any model, is the consolidation of soil after you've tilled it, and where you have the settling prior to the next tillage event. Now, all three of the second, third, and fourth phases should be dealt with differently because they are different processes. And the last two are actually much more complicated than that. During those processes, you can actually have soil movement in the opposing direction of tillage. So you really do need to think of those phases independently and try to model them independently to make sense out of that soil movement. And mathematically, it comes back to the simple relationship where you're trying to measure the amount of soil that's moved. And when we're doing these measurements, we use tracers in the field to measure it. And we can actually look at the distribution of soil movement, as I've indicated here, in terms of the concentration of tracer over a depth of tillage. And you can see that for the downslope, you get a larger average distance, and you get a greater distribution ahead of the initial point here. And upslope tillage is not nearly as much. And so it's the difference between those two distribution curves which represents that change or net soil movement causing the tillage erosion. I guess I'll go back to make one other point. I took some slides out to make it a little shorter. There was one other point to relate to these curves. These distribution curves are actually very useful in understanding the processes, in that you can apply some fairly simple descriptive statistics to actually better isolate the different components of that soil movement. And if you think about these little curves here, you can actually break these curves into the tail and the head area, and the head area relates to that second phase of movement where soil essentially is both moved forward and stops. And the tails actually relate to that failure, rolling, and bouncing. And it's that tail region that actually creates a lot of the tillage erosion where you get the most variability. And by using descriptive statistics, you can really identify those differences in movement from one tillage implement to another under a range of conditions. And the form of the distribution can actually be represented with a number of mathematical functions. The one I use most often to do that is a simple exponential function where you have a proportionality constant. So you can simplify it where you have one constant to represent that distribution And as Gary Kashinowski told me as a grad student, it's important to keep things simple. And I remember him using the word parsimony to describe this approach to describing soil movement. And I've used that since. There are many more complicated functions that you can apply to it, but I don't think they've worked any better than this particular one. Now, the next generation translocation models, I think, will be physically based using discrete particle analysis. There is a limitation to using simply the examination of those distribution functions. They really don't get at the nature of those different phases of movement very well. And you have to go well beyond that. So you need to get into discrete particle analysis. And there has been some work done on that. And even within our group, the experiments needed to develop the next generation of tillage translocation models will be carried out at a fundamental mechanical level, and they will be carried out in a laboratory. And I'm going to just go through a couple of slides to illustrate that. You say, what laboratory may you do that in? Actually, at the University of Manitoba, we've set up a unique laboratory facility where we have a large, what they refer to as a soil bin. And this soil bin is about 2 meters wide and about 23 meters in length, where you have soil and you have various modules along the length of it, which you can actually step at different heights to create different slope gradients. You can plane the soil within those boxes across the width to create a whole range of lateral and forward slope gradients, as well as oblique angles as well. And you operate it by running a carriage that has tillage tools mounted on it along that soil bin surface, and we can run up to, well, in excess of 20 kilometers per hour with that facility. And so that is likely the facility that you would probably use to get at some of these very detailed relationships or specific relationships between soil movement and the different phases. And the work that's been done, there's actually been done by one student of mine who's worked on steady state models of soil and straw movement during tillage, separate models for each of those, and also models of the resultant movement by straw and tillage and the interaction between the tool, the straw, and the soil. And I just have a couple of illustrations from his PhD thesis where he's looking at the different phases of soil movement. In this case, he's looking at soil movement alone, but he's doing it looking at each of the phases separately, and by doing that he's able to come up with physical representations of each one of those phases to come up with a tillage translocation model. And this is showing the forward and lateral movement associated with that first phase, this is the second phase of soil movement here. And there's the movement associated with, that is the first phase, then the second phase is the projection. And then the final phase, he's actually represented in the forward and lateral for the rolling associated with it. And as I said, that relates to the variation you're going to likely get in a complex landscape where you have tillage erosion. The only limitation to this was done on the level, and this has to be expanded into looking at different slopes to come up with a fairly comprehensive model, look at tillage translocation that will result in tillage erosion. And this is some of his data, and he was able to come up with a fairly good representation of soil movement and straw movement, comparing the measured and predicted. For most conditions, it was around 16% difference between the two, the measured and observed, which we thought was pretty good for a first approximation of the modeling. And in summary, tillage erosion is a significant form of soil erosion. Conceptual and mathematical models of tillage erosion are fairly well developed, but the greater sophistication is needed and is possible, I believe. And the conceptual and mathematical models of tillage erosion have been developed. Obviously, there needs to be further advances in this modeling, but they require, I believe, a physical-based approach and involve more sophisticated mathematical and experimental techniques than are currently used. And as I just showed in the previous slides, there are some of those techniques are under develop right now. And the last point, getting to this slide, I want to put a plug in for tillage erosion here. I've chosen this title because pitching soil, I think, is fairly important, because as soil scientists, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to sell soil and the importance of soil, as well as it illustrates or connotes the movement of soil by tillage. And finally, the image itself is kind of interesting. When I was looking for plowing images about a year or so ago, I came across this image, and this is a fractal analysis. And the person who generated this image and a whole bunch of other ones has a book where she describes fractal analysis and the equations that go behind it. And this one she actually called plowing. So it shows that you can have fairly sophisticated models of soil movement that can be applied in fractal analysis, and I can't see why we can't come up with something sophisticated in actually modeling soil movement. So with that, I'll take questions. Thank you. Well, with any time you're lifting soil under the influence of gravity, there's going to be a net downward effect, right? And if you're doing contour tillage, you are going to have some of that downward effect. It may not be as significant or as severe as the up and down slope, and that's because when you go along the contour, you're not subjecting the tractor to the same variation in gradients. In other words, as you're going up and down slope, you have more variation tillage depth and speed than if you're going across the slope. So the erosivity associated with up and down is usually much greater than the contour. But you can use the moldboard plow by throwing the furrow upslope, and you can actually reverse that process or shift soil back upslope. And farmers have actually done that. One farmer I met in England actually was smart enough that he actually figured out what angle he needed to do to throw the furrow or the soil off the furrow directly upslope, and it was about a 35 degree angle. And he was doing that because they were spending, I think every year they were taking, as I said, transport truckloads of soil away from the bottom of the hill and taking it up to the top, and he thought it would be much easier just to plow it with a reversible plow throwing the furrow upslope.
Yes. That was an excellent presentation. I was always a bit of a skeptic of this, and it at least clarified it for me. The one thing that I would suggest, if you are moving to more process-based approach, is that I think there's maybe a fifth thing in that model you put together that could be used. Mm-hmm. And that, you talk about the redistribution immediately after plowing.
Yeah.
But when you get on really steep slopes, and this doesn't happen so much in North America, but in areas that I work in Southeast Asia, when you get on really steep slopes, you also have the susceptibility for what geomorphologists call dry rabble.
Yes, and there's actually...
And that will transport, that's a whole different ballgame in terms of transport.
Yep.
That's not just going to transport little by little, that's going to transport potentially the whole slope line. So
yep.
There might be a threshold there where you,
yep.
And you can look at that from engineering properties,
yep.
Like the internal angle of friction.
Alan Ziegler from Hawaii State University has been looking at that. Okay, that's why, yeah, because he's got a couple of papers on it. It's very true, and the example I gave in Portugal and Spain, where they have that uncohesive soil, you almost start to see that where you initiate that movement and it starts to free fall down the slope, and it can leave the slope. And so you can get very, very high rates of soil erosion related to that. And that all leads to the need to actually move away from linear models to nonlinear models, because the behavior of that, it may or may not be a threshold, but it's certainly, the nature of it is very nonlinear.
Well, it kind of, I think, is a threshold, because when you look at the mechanical property that dictates whether a soil is stable or not is basically tied into the internal angle of friction. And if
True.
You exceed that, then you're going to have rot.
I agree.